And we're off. Welcome to Deep Thinking.
We're off the deep end.
The motorcycle road racing podcast. Don't settle for imposters. Number eight? Is that how many fingers you're holding up?
I'm holding up eight.
I'm counting. Hold on. I'm going to have to, if I try to count to eight, I'm going to have to use my
socks
off.
That's because you're missing some fingers? No, I see
no,
all ten there.
Just because
go trail riding with me.
No,
I will break some of those off.
Don't even hand me that crap. It's because I refuse to use a base 10 numeral system.
Oh, damn those Romans.
Let's do a call back to one of the other shows, right? Other than a base 10 numerical system and a system of language, what have the Romans ever done for us?
Sewer systems, which had something to do with flowing water.
Right.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Oh, and all military units are based on the Romans. The Romans came up with a system that works the best, and it interprets today, even with modern weapons.
Absolutely. I've done the whole thing about the size of two asses and the space shuttle. Horses' asses, I should say.
I missed that one. Sorry.
It's a cart size. The spacing on the wheel of a cart.
Right. Okay.
The width of basically the yoke on
two horses.
So
we're talking about
why
roads are as wide as they are.
Right.
Okay. How does that get to the space shuttle?
Because the transporter.
Yes.
Big parts of the space shuttle were on rail, and if you build rail nowadays, you're going to build it to a standard gauge.
Yes.
You know. So the most modern transportation device devised by human beings, the space shuttle, gets to the actual launch pad on something that is scaled on the size of two horses' asses, thanks to the Romans.
I think you got your story a little wrong, because they had aircraft to transport the parts.
No, not when it's on the ground.
Well,
the crawler
it from the assembly building to the launch pad has massive tracks. And there's multiple bogies.
Are you saying that something that I read on the internet isn't true?
Wrong. It's inaccurate.
That's impossible.
Yeah, partial truth in there somewhere.
Everything
but
you hear on the internet is true.
especially podcasts.
Yes.
Oh.
Besides us, you know, yeah,
exactly,
it's all bull.
Right.
So who's going to win MotoGP next year?
Marquez. He's going to crush everybody.
That's just taking the easy way out.
You know why? It's right.
Okay, so you think somebody can win three in a row?
Absolutely.
Has that ever happened?
Yes.
I know, many times.
Right? I mean, hey, dude, you know, you mentioned Mick Doohan, one of the one.
How many did he win? Six?
No, he won five.
Five in a row?
But they came in a row.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Dude, if he hadn't gotten and that injury was just odd and that there was a lot
of
nerve damage.
That injury was part of his motivation.
No. I'm talking about the injury that ended his career.
Oh, okay.
If it weren't for that weird nerve damage that happened, you know, if it was just a broken bone or something like that, and I say just a broken bone, right? Dude, that guy might still be winning races today. You know? He would have okay, that
well, so Michael and I are going to each make a prediction that we will write down.
Or we'll publish it on the interweb.
No, we want it permanent.
That is.
We'll go back on the internet and change the date, and we change the contact, no problem. We're going to write it down on paper, old school, and we're going to choose our guys. Currently, I am leaning towards Lorenzo, but I am not marking Pedroza out. And the reason is motivation, right? Marquez is in the classic position of being at the top and being at the front, and it's hard to stay motivated, even when you know it's going
to
be hard
to
stay
motivated,
right?
You're conscious of the fact that you could tend to lose concentration.
And to take nothing away from Nick or any of the other people that won a lot of championships in the past, they didn't have to do it against three other aliens.
Right.
You know, there's just the depth of the field that we haven't seen in a long, long time.
And the reality is that, look, the championship is going to come from one of four guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It's going to be. I mean, it's almost.
There's lots of guys who can win, but to be championship, it's going to be those four.
It takes way more than just.
Because it's
being
not
able
just the
win.
Rider, right? It's
right.
The team. It's the bikes. It's all
hey,
of that stuff.
Dovizioso, and who's that lunatic who's on the Iannone? Crazy Joe. Crazy Joe might win you a championship. He might bankrupt your company while doing it. You know, man. I think it's funny. You would think Ducati learned their lesson with what's his name? Oh. Who was Ruben Zauss? Holy crap, that guy probably put them into receivership more than once, right? But no, they hire a guy whose name is Crazy Joe. It's on his leathers, the Maniac Joe. Well, this isn't going to cost us anything in body work.
I think
one of the
motivation. Biggest factors in with a rider who crashes a lot is the crew getting tired of repairing crash damage And not just tired of it, but also there's only so much time in a day.
Yeah.
And if you're spending half of your time fixing shit all the time,
you can't improve the bike.
You can't, exactly.
The best you could do is rebuild it back to where it was.
But how about what happens when you just leave the damn bike alone all year?
Right. And let, like Mr. Crutchlow.
Crutchlow just ride the damn
exactly.
thing.
Exactly.
All of a sudden his results start getting better. It's a thing that, you know, we don't, most people don't think about. With
and
your
we're
going to
think about it here.
We are.
This being the podcast called Deep,
Deep
Thinking.
Thinking.
Yeah.
We're geniuses. at our personal levels, you pretty much got the same bike all year,
you know?
Right? I mean, except for a few things. But these guys have a completely different bike all the time because you got to stay ahead of Honda
right.
or Yamaha or whoever.
Right, right.
And so the rider never gets to really, really. And then, of course, the track is different every freaking weekend.
Right.
You know.
And at that level, you know, 10 degrees temperature. It's a different motorcycle. I might have mentioned this before. I'm sure I'm going to mention this about every sixth podcast. Carlos Checa, when he was on the factory Yamaha 500 team, used to complain, on Friday when I show up, I never know what motorcycle I'm going to be riding because the pace of development was so rapid that the bike he got off of on Sunday at night or Sunday evening the weekend before was not the motorcycle that was sitting in his garage waiting for him on Friday.
And the funny part about that is there's an engineer who hears those words
and
has no idea what the guy's talking about.
He doesn't understand that it's a complaint.
Yeah, exactly.
he's like, yeah. Right. bike is much better now.
Top secret to jetting change.
Exactly.
Oh, right. My God. Yeah, right. There's a lot of stuff going on. You may fantasize about having that job, but just remember that having a different girl waiting for your room every night because you're a Rolling Stone.
Right.
Means you have a different girl waiting in your room every
exactly.
night. That's not
always
a good always thing.
Not always good. It's like, oh, what's under that that skirt? Never mind. This is a PG-rated podcast. It's funny. You know, part of the reason, if I can pat myself on the back, that I was as competitive as I was racing the SV at Willow. Oh, don't make me come over there and punch you in the head. Hey, I beat you on Saturday.
You were
on a TZ250.
You only look like you're close to me because I'm lapping you.
You were ashamed of yourself, Ed. That's my belief. I have such low self-esteem. I believe that everybody that I pass on the track should immediately be black flagged.
You got passed by Gugis, dude.
You got to turn in your license. You have to go home now. But part of it was simply same bike, same tires, same track for years. You know, there's a level of comfort. You can get to 98% and be comfortable there, and then you can make tiny little incremental changes, and you're comfortable.
But you don't get that.
You don't get that at the GP level.
No, that's their prototype bike, and they're there to develop shit.
Exactly.
Here's
a new frame.
So
try this.
So who's going to kick everybody's ass in World Superbike?
Well, hold on. Let's go back to MotoGP.
Okay.
We were talking about, it's funny, because my belief is that one of the ways you make racing good economically is give lots of different people chances to come play. And one of the ways you do that is by having a bunch of different classes. You have, no matter what the rules say, there's going to be two classes in MotoGP. There's going to be the full factory, full boogie stuff, and then there's going to be everybody else. And there's no shame in being the first guy winning the unofficial everything else category. So our champion is going to be one of four guys. I think Pedrosa knows that this is going to be his last shot at it. And I think Lorenzo knows if he doesn't win this year, he's going to have a much, 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 much more difficult time being number one on the team. I think Lorenzo has to beat Rossi. Even if he's third in every race behind the two Repsols, he has to beat Rossi more than anything else.
I wonder if that dynamic of the most important person to beat is your teammate, which is played up a lot in the media. People think that's a great story. I wonder if that matters nearly as much as it used to. At that level, the Yamaha and the Honda team, they know that inter-team fighting is counterproductive. And, you know,
You mean in the garage and the development and all
exactly,
that stuff?
Right. Yamaha cannot be sad if Rossi continues to be a dominant force in racing,
right?
And so, you know, if the best you can do is match your teammate, Rossi.
Well,
I don't think it hurt Yamaha at all this year to finish second and third in the championship.
No, I don't
compared
think
compared to Honda winning it.
And I sure don't think it hurt to look at those shots in Parc Fermé and see two Yamahas up there.
Exactly.
You know?
So I don't think that.
But hold on.
Now, on a psychological, personal level, I can see that he wants to beat Rossi every bit as much as Rossi wants him. But I don't think it's like a done. I don't think if you get beat by Rossi, it's a horrible thing.
Well, no, it's not a horrible thing. I mean, you know, Rossi's got a pretty good chance of beating me. If we were to ever race together, and I couldn't tell anybody, I couldn't wait to tell people that I got beat by
Rossi. You want to know the definition between a racer and a club guy, a pro and a club guy, that matters?
Yeah.
If you can look inside of my head, when I line up on the grid, it won't matter who's there next to me. It can be Rossi on his MotoGP bike and me on my Hurricane.
Okay.
The part of my brain that's in charge at that time that matters knows that I can beat his ass. Off the line, into the first corner, out of the corner, the whole bit.
And some rationalization. Somewhere in your head, you truly believe it.
Sitting here, I can totally know, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Yep, but when it matters, I deliberately turn on the part of my brain that says, I'm going to beat everybody.
I can be at the back of the grid and say, this is an advantage.
That's right. It is. Yeah. And that's not all these bad psychological terms about you're out of your mind and you're self-centered and all. It's racing,
exactly.
And if you don't believe in yourself first, don't go do it.
No, you can't.
It's too dangerous. It's too hard.
You have to believe in that you can achieve whatever goal you've set out for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it all.
And then the way you square that, when you come back in and reality goes, dude, Rossi beat you by three laps.
Yeah, exactly.
You go,
there was only a two-lap race.
No shit, dude, but I had the balls to line up against that motherfucker on a Hurricane. Where were you?
At that moment, I completely believed that it was going to work.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and here's the other beautiful side of that, right? A guy like Rossi, in that, let's say really happened, we're Willow Springs, and he's got his MotoGP bike, and I'm on a Hurricane. He looks over at me, and he knows that part of me,
the part
that's in charge right now, is going to do, and he's going to respect that. He gets that. He knows.
Course.
Dude, when he lines up on the grid all fucked up or whatever, he still believes he's going to win.
Absolutely.
And only after he's forced to fight for second place does he then switch the real stat and go, okay, I'm going to take second place then.
Right. And I'm completely convinced that today I'm going to take second place.
And that, I think, is the thing that makes non-racers not understand racers. They see it as, like, that's our whole personality, that we believe that completely and totally, and it puts them off. And it's not. We only believe it when we need to, when our visor's closed, and we try to keep it mostly to ourselves. And we believe it for a few minutes after the race, and then we calm down, we turn back into normal people, right?
Okay, so you think Lorenzo or Pedrosa, motivation, desperation, will get them to the top of the MotoGP?
No, not desperation. Motivation, that's who they are, that's what they want, that's what they do, and they're going to... They're going to do something different this offseason that they didn't do before. And if it's the right combination in comparison to the other guys, then they're going to win. And Pedrosa is just cruise changing up.
Right.
That worked for Rossi.
Hey.
Right? There's a million versions of the formula is unlimitedly long.
That's why anybody...
You can't really predict it. But
anybody who
the
really...
guy who's been winning has to seriously considering doing exactly the same thing. It fucking
worked.
Right,
because it worked.
Right?
I've got two championships. Why am I changing anything?
You don't want to throw that away. And in his case, not just two championships, massive amounts of wins in those 2 years.
Yeah.
All right. You don't change that very much. So they're kind of limited in how much improvement they can.
Absolutely.
These guys over here are like, I got fucking nothing to lose.
Hey,
right?
We didn't go to rear-engined formula cars until the front-engine cars had been beaten soundly by cars with engines one-third the size of them.
Right?
You know?
It's the losers who are going to be the motivators.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's very nice way
and
to put
those,
it.
And those guys are all, they all totally have the ability to win on any given day.
Now, having said that, Marquez is still going to win. Okay. Now, it's funny, you talk about the teammate thing. World Superbikes. And we talk about first job is beating your teammate. I truly believe that Sylvain Guintoli is world champion, Superbike world champion, because in 2013, he ignored all of the preseason press, and he went out, and he was faster than the teammate that had been anointed as the next champion. And he wasn't always faster, but he was quick enough that the team was not going to go immediately, oh, this guy's second rate.
Well, and paying too much attention to the press about this stuff.
Exactly.
I mean, there's a few guys who get it and have done it and know what they're talking about.
Right.
But most of them are just cheerleaders.
Oh, yeah.
They're just running their mouths.
No clue. Plus, you know, and it's really sort of sad, you know, most of the, let me rephrase that. In a number of the English language blogs that I read, they're so desperate to see a non-Spanish champion. Yes. That it's just it borders on,
you know,
racist.
I can't tell what race anybody is once they got their
they
helmet
the visor
and
down,
their leathers on.
Kaboom! It's time to get. They're fast.
They're a human, they're, right?
No, you know? No, I'm not even sure if they're human they're or aliens. Not. I've seen some of the stuff that Rossi and Marquez can do. It's like, wow, the laws of physics just don't apply to those guys.
Well, you just borrow traction from the future or the past, and then you just have to remember to repay.
You've got to remember it's going to come and bite you. Hey, seriously. I think that's why Casey Stoner was champion in 2007, and then in 2009 and 10 he couldn't buy a win. And that's not true. That's an exaggeration. But I think that those guys are riding over the limit all the time.
Yes.
And every corner is a crash.
Mm-hmm.
And every one you come out of, mm-hmm. you took some traction from some point in the future.
Casey was clearly burning it at both ends, and that shortens your career up. And the genius of Casey, besides being geniusly fast,
right,
is that he saw it and said, you know what, I stopped before.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wipe my own ass.
Right.
And, you know? Besides, I've got a wife. Have you seen her?
Have you seen
make some babies?
Have you seen my house?
Yeah, exactly, right?
Exactly.
You know, it's our prejudice that we want them to continue for a long time because they're so excited. And we don't get to decide. That is his life.
Exactly.
You know, you want to go race yourself.
Exactly. You know, give
World Superbike. I think it's going to be down to who has the best production bike on the showroom floor. It's going to be a bigger factor than it has been, especially compared to MotoGP, where the team matters a lot more.
Exactly. You need a frame? Here's a frame, you know, and 34
Who
geniuses.
Has the right combination that can be tweaked the way it needs to be tweaked the easiest by the most people?
That's why I'm thinking, you know, my latest blog post on, I'm going to plug my blog, Motorsports, sorry.
If you can remember the name.
Right. Motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com, where you can find a copy of this podcast, which you might have to find it anyway. BMW, given the rules package for next year, they're starting from a very high point. You know, they claim.
I love that sharing information idea, too.
Oh, that was
a big pool.
Just genius.
Right? Yeah.
Just genius. And the bike, they said it makes 199 horsepower stock. You know, dude. You don't have to do a lot to get competitive horsepower out of it. I think that Kawasaki they were in a little bit of trouble. I think, and it's because what they had taken away from them in the new rules is the thing that allowed them to make a production bike as fast as it was.
Right.
That thing was a missile in a straight line, dude. And that's why Aprilia is bailing. You know, the things that they did to make it a missile, they can't do anymore. Which is, you know, okay, so it's going.
It's racing. You got to adapt.
And that's.
And it's street bike based racing too. So you have to.
Yeah, you can't.
Man, that's a beautiful red tail hawk there.
That
two
is
of them.
Gorgeous. Yeah. That one was in a dive. Did you notice its wings
were
folded?
They were maneuvering and hanging out. They might be courting. I'm not sure. Man, I live in a beautiful part of the world.
Yeah, you do. Hey, it's mid-December and we're doing this outside, yo.
Oh, we're cold though. We're wearing sweatshirts.
We are a little chilly.
And we're moving the chairs of the studio around to stay in the sun. This is going to be the last show today because the sun's gone.
Exactly. There is that. And that's the thing we were talking about, the more production-based bikes. One of the things I like about World Superbike is because you can't bring a new frame for a new track. You can't. You're stuck with that. You're going to get more winners, and that's
different winners.
Different winners. The bike that works at Imola is not the bike that works in Sepang.
Yep.
You know, and they're all very good. Don't get me wrong. Okay. They're all really good at what they do. They've really built the bike to the edge of its capabilities.
You know? One clear sign of how good bikes have gotten.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't used to hear people talking about. I went 10 seconds faster this year at this track than I did last year.
Yeah.
Back in the days of the 500, the range of is too big.
Right.
Nobody could do the same lap over and over and all that kind of stuff like they can do now. So that's definitely in that category of the racing. Clearly, for next season, is going to be good in all categories. Who's going to win in America? with the new series, Moto America.
Why don't we just mail the trophy to Josh now? Save us some time and effort.
So you're saying that skill, seriousness, dedication, teamwork, yeah, all of those things are the predominant
thing? I think, honestly, unless there's some...
They're looking at major rule changes compared to AMA, so some other bikes might be more competitive than they were.
I think... Unless there is an undiscovered flaw somewhere in that new R1, which is always a possibility.
It's a new bike. It could be. Who knows?
But you know what, dude? The effort that Yamaha puts into this sport, the team that they have put together, the dedication, that's the reason they're winning,
dude. Yoshimura hasn't been winning for a while, but they still got basically the same team, and they got the knowledge.
They do. They don't have the support from Suzuki, and they're starting from a lesser place. You know, that, I mean, don't
Meaning
get
the bike, not the team.
Yeah. The bike is old, you know. They could really, really use an upgrade. They could use some more. And I know you
can. Bold new graphics?
No.
More than that?
You could probably, I think you might have to actually repaint, not just stickers.
I think the winner in the American series is going to be the fan. I think it's going to be a huge change in the way that things are being run. I think we're going to start taking steps towards the new media world that you and I keep talking about.
Okay.
I think we're taking steps in the direction of finding rules that work for everybody, where it's about, listen, what rules do we need so that as many people as possible can be competitive,
right,
and everybody understanding and accepting that. You don't hear the NASCAR guys bitching that those cars aren't really Fords or whatever. They just love the show.
Every time anybody mentions NASCAR as a model, I just want to stab them in the throat. You know, and you're lucky I'm not actually holding something right now.
I'm wearing a suit of armor. My throat's protected.
Jesus Christ. No, that's all entertainment.
But you take my point.
I do. I really don't think the racing is going to be much better.
No, the racing itself isn't going to be better, but the drama is going to be under control. And then you can just enjoy the racing.
The non-racing bullshit is definitely going to be lower, I think. Here's the thing. I don't really see a problem with two teammates slugging it out for absolute glory. What was I going to say? Julian Ryder wrote something that wasn't too long ago on...
2 minute warning.
Almost.
No, blown past it already.
On Superbike Planet.
Who's going to win 600 Super Sport on the world level?
Martin Cardenas.
We called it here.
He's going to outbreak everybody from 10th, man.
He's going to win the championship.
He's going to leave those guys gasping.
2 minute warning, Michael Gugis. What do you think of classes exclusively for women?
Whatever gets a racer on the grid, I don't care. You want to have short guy classes. And you know what? I was joking about that.
I could
win that.
I'll challenge Pedroza.
You know what? There are basketball leagues, club level, you know, city basketball leagues for people under 5'8".
Sweet.
You know, I don't care what it takes to get somebody
still
on
too
the
tall for me.
Yeah, right? I don't
Do
care.
They lower the net?
I don't know if they use lower goals or not. I don't care.
Yeah.
If
you're competing, it's all good.
Exactly.
And if you don't like the idea, then shut your mouth and stay out.
Just don't enter that class, you know?
Deep thinking with Ed Sorbo and Michael Gugis. Aloha.
Jesus.